This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The highly acclaimed playwright Nikki Silver came in the other day to talk about the world premiere of Kurt Vonnegut's Make Up Your Mind, now on stage at the Speakeasy Stage Company in Boston. And Silver had a lot to tell us.
Okay, here's the deal. Here's what happened. Here's how it worked. Okay, here's what happened.
We're going to tell you about the play in a minute. But first, understand that a conversation with Nikki Silver moves in a lot of unexpected directions. You might want to talk about the play. He wants to talk about his aversion to swimming.
I haven't been in a body of water larger than a bathtub, I would say, 40 years.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, really. Or maybe he wants to talk about the indignities of being a man of a certain age.
Like all of a sudden, everything's going fine, and then one day you find yourself stretching your flesh over your knees, and it's just too horrible.
But eventually, Nikki Silver did talk to us about the play, for the most part, as you'll hear. Kurt Vonnegut's Make Up Your Mind was written by the late, great Kurt Vonnegut, who died in 2007. He left behind about a dozen versions of his play. Apparently, he couldn't make up his mind. So Nikki Silver rewrote it, adapting Vonnegut's multiple scripts and a trove of personal notes and correspondence that immersed the audience deep into Vonnegut's imagination and singular view of the world.
The story is of this man named Roland Stackhouse who has this theory that the biggest problem plaguing mankind is indecisiveness. So he sets up this business wherein people go to him who need help to become decisive, and they make a decision, and if they don't stick to it, they have the living daylights beaten out of them. And that's basically the premise. But as it turns out, that's just the beginning of a series of shenanigan-like adventures.
Yeah. Now, there's an irony, obviously, in this play. It's called Make Up Your Mind. The irony, of course, the original play, Kurt Vonnegut couldn't make up his mind about how he wanted to end this play. So he wrote a whole bunch of different versions of the play. How many versions did he write?
He wrote 722 versions of the play. No, I have no idea how many.
But a lot.
I was given
More than one.
I was given like 10.
Wow.
But I don't know. There may be, I think they're still uncovering versions of the play.
Yeah.
They were somewhere in Al Capone's vault, somewhere
buried under Giant
somewhere
Stadium.
Somewhere with Jimmy Hoffa. He gave some to Jimmy Hoffa. They've been uncovered. I don't know how many. A lot. I tell you, I read a lot of them.
Well, so this must have been a challenge. How did you go about assembling one script from all these different versions?
Well, there were through lines in all the versions, and there were, I don't remember. I don't. I mean, I looked, I thought, well, what is the basic story here? And where's the scene that tells me that? And where's the line that tells me that? So I don't know. I don't remember.
Let me ask this question.
What, ask me something, yes. I sound not very bright.
No,
really.
You sound terrific. But here's, I'm going to try to
use a big word. And say, it's solipsistic. I don't know. Okay. I heard it once.
It's a good word to use.
Thank you.
So we're going to keep that. Were you intimidated by the idea of write this play based on, you know, at least a dozen versions of this play that that Vonnegut left behind?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm such a good interviewer, aren't I? No. No, why? I mean, I would have been intimidated, like, if he was there.
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
They say, thank you so much for your efforts. Here's your check, and we'll go to Paul Rudnick, who was our first choice anyway. So I'm not intimidated by artistic challenges in general. You have to have a very preconceived notion of what something is meant to be to feel you've achieved it or not achieved it. And that isn't really I try to make that at least not my process.
Nikki, let's listen to a clip.
All right.
We have a clip here from one of from the monologue of the Kurt Vonnegut character in
Correct.
This play. So this is Richard Snee portraying Vonnegut talking about the main character in the play, the sort of quasi-therapist Roland Stackhouse.
Yes.
Let's listen.
Roland Stackhouse is a fool. I'm sorry, I should have introduced myself before. I'm Kurt Vonnegut, and Roland Stackhouse is a fool. He thinks, in fact, he's certain that indecisiveness is the great plague of our time. It's not. Loneliness is the cancer that's killing us.
So that's Richard Snee portraying Kurt Vonnegut in the play Kurt Vonnegut's Make Up Your Mind, premiering at the Speakeasy Stage in Boston. And with me is playwright Nikki Silver. So I want to just ask you about this process, because you had the various versions of Kurt Vonnegut's play, but you also went into his letters, his essays, and other works, which you incorporated into this play, right?
Well, largely, in most of the versions, in all of the versions, I think, there was a character who had these monologues interspersed between some of the scenes. And because the play is pretty absurd, I actually thought it would be a really interesting framing device to have Kurt Vonnegut himself comment on the play between the scenes. Mm. But everything that Kurt Vonnegut says is unedited, exactly something that he wrote or said.
Wow. So from his letters, from his journals.
Yeah, I loved his letters.
Mm. Tell me why.
Well, they were dirty. No, they weren't dirty at all. They were lovely, lovely letters. I love them because, I mean, you know, he's Kurt Vonnegut. His face is on T-shirts and Barnes & Noble and everything. And so you have this sort of idea that he's a great figure. And the reality is his letters really show a very human side of him who struggled for a long time to gain some recognition as a writer and then dealt with varying degrees of success with his success as a writer. And that humanized him and made me feel protective of him, actually, in a very specific way. I mean, being a writer and certainly not, you know, I mean, I earn a paltry living. I'm wearing rags. You can tell the people who are listening I'm wearing rags.
Actually, it's not true. You're quite spiffily dressed.
No, rags. Don't believe him. Every word out of this man's
mouth.
You've
even got a pocket square.
Yeah, well, that's a rag that I found. I was the first person up at the homeless shelter this morning. But I was saying, I'm certainly not in his category in terms of success, but all writers go through that kind of struggle, you know, to get somebody to listen to you.
Right.
You know, you think for such a long time, if they'll just listen to me, they'll like me. I related to that. It made me feel a great deal of affection for him.
Hmm. How familiar were you with Kurt Vonnegut's work before you got involved in this project?
I was not particularly familiar. I mean, I had read Slaughterhouse-Five many years ago and liked it, but beyond that, I had not read anything of Kurt Vonnegut's in a very, very long time. I have a very good friend who is obsessed with Kurt Vonnegut. Mm. Obsessed. I believe he has the words Kurt Vonnegut tattooed on some private portion of his anatomy that I have never seen.
Goodness.
I'm just telling you. That's really why I went to the initial meeting, because I thought, let me see what I can find out and I can report back to my friend. But then I was fascinated by the idea.
Yeah, sure. I loved Slaughterhouse-Five. I don't think I even realized until I was reading about your project that he did write plays. What do you think drew him to playwriting?
The same thing that draws. That's right. I've had a stroke during the course of the interview, a series of small strokes.
Just breathe deeply. The paramedics are on their way.
I think the same thing that draws most people to playwriting, which is the community of it. I mean, and I think I know he expressed this, that writing novels is a very solitary experience. Frankly, writing plays is a very solitary experience, but the production of plays is a very communal and familial and joyous experience. I've had a lot of plays produced, and I've had hits, and I've had bombs, and I had this play. It was one of the worst experiences I ever had. It was called Three Changes at Playwrights Horizons. I used to say it was so bad at intermission, some of the walkouts usually included the cast. And but
that's got to really hurt.
Oh, it was terrible. We would just go on stage and go, does anyone want to finish? Get up. But the reality is, looking back, there was still a great deal of joy in having created it. And it's a very communal experience.
Yeah. Let's listen to one more clip from the play. This is a scene that sets up some of the conflict between the main character, Roland Stackhouse, played by Barlow Adamson, and his father, played by Ross Bickle. The first voice we hear is that of Mr. Fletcher, one of Roland's clients.
How can you let this happen to your son?
I know his limitations.
But not his possibilities.
That is how you raised me. Always you insisted on mediocrity.
Well, be honest, you met me halfway.
What kind of father were you?
Well, the kind I knew how to be. I taught you baseball and marbles and how to make a whiskey sour.
No, you didn't.
That wasn't you?
You taught me to expect failure. You taught me to expect nothing of myself.
So that's a scene from Kurt Vonnegut's Make Up Your Mind, which was edited and reworked by playwright Nikki Silver. I read something you said in a recent interview, and I want to quote it.
It's a lie.
You said one of the things you and Kurt Vonnegut have in common is the desire to push the limits of conventional theater. And you said that disregard of the conventional rules of playmaking made you a good choice for this project and created a sort of an affinity between you and Vonnegut. Say more about that.
Well, I doubt I said it made me a good choice, because that would have been too self-evident.
I think you actually said
something like...
I think
I responded. They said, what made you a good choice?
You said it made me not a bad choice.
Right, because I wouldn't be that self-aggrandizing in an interview. I mean, I would be in life, but I'm not a fool. Kurt Vonnegut only wrote one play aside from this called Happy Birthday, Wanda June. You know, from just that one example, he was, you know, he breaks the fourth wall and he has dead characters talking to the audience. And he's very, he accepts the convention that the theater is not reality, that movies can pretend to be reality. But in the theater in general, you generally have a small group of people telling a story to hopefully a larger group of people. And there's implications in that that sort of conventional theater doesn't necessarily embrace. And I think he was excited by that. It seems as if he was when you read Happy Birthday, Wanda June. And my plays also have always acknowledged that you're watching a play, but it's not Arsenic and Old Lace.
Okay.
Nothing against Arsenic and Old Lace. It's a fine piece of material. I wish I'd written it. I'd be rich, rich, rich.
So, Nikki Silver, you are you have had some great successes.
Oh, and
I want to get that out ahead of this next question I want to ask. Yeah. Boston hasn't always given you the warmest welcome. Your play Pterodactyls was actually booed by the audience in its 1994 Boston premiere.
No.
So wait, I have a question. Did that cause you to hesitate about having the premiere of Make Up Your Mind here in Boston?
No, the lack of invitation to return delayed my return.
Delayed
I was not invited.
Oh, I got it.
No, they didn't boo in general. It was, you know, it was 20 years ago, and we were at a very, at the time, conservative theater, the Huntington. I think it's a very different place now. It was a very fur coat wearing kind of crowd.
Yeah.
And it was only 20 years ago, but in that play, which won a lot of awards, just so as you know.
You didn't get it.
No. Well, no, I love Boston. Now you're going to have me beat up. It's, I believe, Boston Red Sox. It's the Red Sox. Go Red Sox. Anyway, there's a scene in that play where two men, young men, kiss. I mean, that's all they do is kiss. It's not like, you know, it ends up in some kind of mud wrestling shenanigans. But there would be like audible hisses some nights in the audience. So it did not make me hesitate to return. I really do love, I've had a fantastic time every minute I've been here. I've loved Boston. And I don't think that would happen today.
I think you're right. I think it's a much changed city, and for the better, I would say.
Well, all right then.
Okay, moving on.
Although last night I was chased down the street by people with tar and feathers. But
that's our way of expressing affection. But don't take that the wrong way.
I didn't. I learned to outrun a man by chasing the ice cream truck in my neighborhood.
Tell me finally, for the folks who come to see Make Up Your Mind, what do you hope the audience takes away about who Kurt Vonnegut was? What did you learn about who he was in making this project?
I think what they take away from it is someone who had a really fascinating worldview. I mean, that's the thing about the play, is you spend 90 minutes really with Kurt Vonnegut completely, because even though he's a character in the play, who all of his stage time is probably 5 minutes, but it's all Kurt Vonnegut. So you're spending 90 minutes with this man who had a very unique voice, a very fascinating worldview. I think it's just a chance to really spend some time with a great artist who is gone. Yeah.
Well, I think that...
Not unlike the Jimi Hendrix experience that I'm working on next.
Fantastic.
I
really wanted to hear more about
maybe
that.
Maybe you would like to invest. Maybe $100, $200 in cash. I'll take it now.
All right.
I'll write you a receipt.
Playwright Nikki.
I'm so sorry about this interview. That's all I can say. I apologize to all the listeners.
It's been fantastic. Nikki Silver is a playwright. He crafted the script for a new version of Kurt Vonnegut's Make Up Your Mind, which is making its world premiere at the Speakeasy Stage in Boston. It runs through November 30th. There's more information at radioboston.org. And Nikki Silver, thank you so much for coming in. What a pleasure.
I had a time.
And what a ride. All right. And as we mentioned, there is more information about Nikki Silver and the play at radioboston.org.
Our show is produced by Amory Sievertson, Dina Rosendorf, Alex Kingsbury, Mira Sharma, and Kathleen McNerney.
Our intern is Brianna Jimerson.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.